Welcome to the Ada Bible Church Beyond the Weekend podcast, where we debrief the sermon, focusing on extra points of connection and what there just wasn't time for in the message. We hope this podcast will encourage you to study God's Word and grow your relationship with Him. You'll appreciate the conversation most if you've already heard the weekend sermon, and you can find that link in the show notes. Thanks for joining us for today's episode of Beyond the Weekend podcast. Well, welcome to the Beyond the Weekend podcast for the Epic Sermon Series, episode 15. I'm Amelia Rhodes, their Director of Discipleship Resources. So glad you're here. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Stephen Lewis, our pastor of spiritual formation. We did it. Like, we're nearing the end.
I know this is our last podcast for the Epic Series.
Yeah, we're going to do one more special one next week.
Right, we're going to do a wrap-up kind of year in review episode. But what a fun series.
Yeah. I have just loved it. I love the Old Testament, and this has made me love it even more. And this week, we have this special treat. We had Pastor Jeff Mannion join us. Actually, he joined us last week. We record on Monday. He was here on Tuesday, right after the Beyond the Weekend meeting, and we talked about Nehemiah. And it's always fun to talk about, you know, the sermon in the Beyond the Weekend meeting and then come right here and film and get that kind of early preview. It was a great conversation.
It was. It's Jeff. He just lives and breathes God's word and passion for it. And it's just always fun to see that in a different environment and have our people be able to see it in a different environment. And I think they're just going to really love this conversation.
Yeah, we hit some highlights here of the messy middle of rebuilding, talking about Nehemiah. We talked about when to keep going and what to not give up on, which sometimes is hard to know. And he didn't get a chance to talk about that in the sermon. So that's a little bonus content. And then we did a little behind the scenes conversation about the succession and how that's going. And then also some of the why. And the reasoning that he mentioned in the sermon he didn't have time to talk about, we talked about here with him, and it was just really powerful. But before we jump into that conversation, I almost forgot, and I prompted you right before this.
I know.
Because you almost forgot to your 10-word
right
recap of the sermon. No pressure, but it's the last one.
I wrote this 30 seconds ago.
Okay.
But here's what I have. Rebuilding isn't an accident. It's intentionally partnering with God.
I like that, partnering with God and the work that he's doing. I would say well done for the grand finale.
Hey, not bad for 30 seconds
ago. 30 seconds of thought. I love it. That's the way it should be. Deep, it's so deep in you, you can just say it. I love that. Well, let's listen to this conversation with Jeff now. Well, hello, Pastor Jeff. Welcome back to the podcast. It's been fun to have you a few times this series. Hard to believe that we're nearing the end.
I know, closing in on the end.
Which is, like, I think this is week 15 of 16, so only one to go. You're wrapping us up. This weekend, you're going to teach on Nehemiah.
Yeah.
And we've said that one of the beauties and one of the challenges is to cover such a big character in one sermon.
Yeah, I had David. I don't know how many chapters are on David in the Bible, but like 60 some, I think it was. And trying to cover that in, you know, under, you know, 40 minutes is just a major, major challenge. And Daniel last week, but it's a joy and a terror to try to cram a whole story into a single message. Yeah.
And there's always great things that don't make the sermon that end up on the cutting floor.
Yeah.
And so as we start, is there just anything about Nehemiah that you just know you're not going to be able to get to and you wish you could? You've preached Nehemiah, I think, 3 or 4 times over 40 years.
You know, I think in my, 42 years at Ada, I think I've hit Nehemiah every 10 to 12 years.
Wow.
So I know I've done it at least 3 times. Yeah. But the most recent was just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the Nehemiah story, kind of the architecture of the story, there's been a devastating war, people hauled off into captivity, and then they're allowed to return to Israel. And yet the walls of Jerusalem are still in shambles, 100 plus years after the destruction in 587 BC. And so something 445 BC, Nehemiah comes in, rallies the people to rebuild the walls. And it's just, I'm in love with the book and I'm in love with the storyline because it's a story of perseverance. It's a story of steady faithfulness when you're exhausted, continuing to push through when you feel like giving up. And it's just not an easy project. And there's sweat and there's blisters and there's sore muscles and there's God's favor hovering over the project. And so there's a lot of reasons to love the story, the action story of Nehemiah.
One of the things you pointed out to us in the Beyond the Weekend meeting that we just came from here a few minutes ago was that God is throughout the story.
Yeah.
And we've said this a couple times that really, like, God is the main character of all of these stories. Where you see his favor, his power, or they prayed to him and his protection.
Yeah, there's this one point where they're bracing literally for a physical attack. They're surrounded by all of these people groups and kind of these warlord characters that do not want to see Jerusalem thrive. It's like if Judea, Jerusalem, gain in prominence and effectiveness, they'll kind of lose market share as players in the area. So literally, it's going to be a good old-fashioned bloodbath. Mm. And just that beautiful verse where Nehemiah says, "So we prayed to God and posted a guard."
Yeah.
And I love that. Yeah. I love that because, well, what do? Do you trust God or do you take action? And a lot of times it's both. You trust the Lord once again and fill out another resume.
Yeah.
You trust the Lord and you set up an appointment with a fertility specialist. Mm-hmm. You trust the Lord and you sit down with a budget counselor. And so it's this just this beautiful interlocking. Mm-hmm. They know that they need God's favor and protection. And at the same time, it's an action story and people are jumping into action. Mm-hmm. And so I just love the fact numerous times just in chapter 4 where God makes an appearance. We pray to God. God empowered us too. When they heard that God had frustrated their plans, mm-hmm. you know, people coming in causing the bloodbath. And then we got back to work. Mm-hmm. And so I just love that mix that we find there.
I was just last night hanging out with some of my guys on mountain bike and we were trying to find a way to stay connected over the winter.
Yeah,
so we're
doing
a book, reading a book together and it was talking about, it's a book on biblical manhood and it's talking about action versus passivity and how so many guys are passive. And we were talking about, okay, what does that look like for us to take action, but also to seek God in it? And so it's like, it's that trusting God and being a man of action and not just sitting around and waiting as I think if you were to diagnose one of the things that's problematic in the U.S. and men, as a lot of people say, they're just too passive. They don't take responsibility. They don't do anything.
Or when we're active, we can be hyper-aggressive.
Yeah.
And there's something about when there's chaos, we get this flight or fight thing where either we come in like a bulldozer or just kind of wimp out. And I think the Jesus way leads us to engage chaos, to move toward chaos without wimping out and without bulldozing. But man, I'm telling you, that doesn't come naturally for most guys. That's a learned skill.
Yeah, we were just sitting there talking about it and like, okay, we know we need to seek God in this. So what does it look like to be like, okay, God, here's what I think it looks like for me to take action in this. Please, almost like, please let me have your spirit lead me if this isn't the right way.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what you see here is posting a guard. He's taking action on it. And then he's asking God, like, I really need your help in this. And if there's a different way, then let me know too. But,
Before coming to Ada Bible, I did a fair amount of writing and people would often ask me, and I still get this question, you probably do too, like, how do I become a writer? What do I do? And so when I explained, there were years of, you know, going to conferences and practicing writing and submitting things and filling out things. And I've had several times where I've talked to people who just have this call, this dream, I want to write.
Yeah.
And they imagine sitting down and just doing it. And I explain kind of the journey. They're like, well, that sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes. Yes.
There's a difference. I say, do you want to write or do you want to have published?
Right.
And there's a lot of people that want to have been published, but the actual work of writing, which requires, as you know, time and place, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, between 8 o'clock in the evening and 10 o'clock at night, or, you know, sometime during the day without that discipline. So we say we want to write, but most people mean we want to.
We want to have written.
There's an old cliche. Well, I love that. What's that? The best thing about writing? It's having written.
Yes.
But
I think that's true with like all of the gifts that God gives us. Yeah. It doesn't mean it's just a download. There is work involved to build a skill, to build a gift, and then employ it and have the opportunity. So that just came to mind as we're talking of, it's both and. You do the work and you trust God.
Yeah.
Well, and that reminds me of something else you said in the Beyond the Weekend meeting about, you know, Nehemiah is this story, and you're going to talk about how there's the messy middle where you have lost all of your kind of hoorah.
Yeah.
And you also don't see the end, and how that is a a moment where if you're doing the right thing, you have to persevere.
Okay. Yeah. Rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. There's this point where the wall, it says it reached half its height.
Yeah.
So I've got halfway done. And people are exhausted and all they can see is this rubble. And midway of any major endeavor is one of the most dangerous spaces, right. Mm-hmm. Because you no longer have the starter enthusiasm, you know, the beginner energy, and yet the finish line is nowhere in sight. And that's where a lot of things get abandoned, is midstream, because you just tire out in the, what I, racing metaphor, the lonely middle miles. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've done my, you know, about a dozen marathons. And at the start, there's all these families there on your mark, get set. And then at the end, there's a finish line. And in the middle, it's just, you're just kind of out there on some road. Yeah. And it's the lonely middle miles that can be the most lonely, mm-hmm. and the most, where the, we're the most susceptible, you know, to not making it.
And I think what, one of the things that you were trying to draw a distinction of in the meeting, and you said, I don't know how I'm going to be able to cover this in the sermon.
Yeah.
But is that there are projects that you get to the middle of that you need to see through. And there are other things in life that you have to discern whether it's worth keeping going on.
Yeah. Because you could look at the, you could look at the story of Nehemiah and easily turn it into a motivational, you know, never give up, never give up. There are some times when you should. Mm-hmm. I want to say never give up on the things that you shouldn't give up on. Mm-hmm. But someone's in a degree program and they've got a child and then they find out that they're expecting twins. No, just push through, get it done. It's kind of like, you might need to put that on ice for a while. And Hollywood, LA is filled with individuals that thought they wanted to be an actor or an actress. And of course you have these stories of someone that is then discovered after, you know, going to interviews and auditions for 16 years. Mm-hmm. And then finally their moment came and now they're this blockbuster, you know, actor. Behind that are a bunch of people that needed to come up with a different dream because that story is so rare. And so I think one of the challenges is how can I remain faithful and not quit on those things that I'm not supposed to quit, and then hold a bunch of other things loosely. You know, in our meeting, you know, I said, if you're 37 and still dreaming of going to the tryouts of the West Michigan Whitecaps in the hopes of becoming the shortstop for the Detroit Tigers, might be time to move on to another dream. And so it's not, it's a graduation, you know, you're the high school graduation, reach for the stars, follow your dreams. And I'm the old guy sitting in the bleachers going like, get a summer job, you know? And so it's this, how do I pursue what I'm supposed to pursue? And so I know some things. I know that I'm not supposed to give up on my marriage. Mm-hmm. Challenging seasons with our kids. Wasn't supposed to give up on our kids. Yeah. To stay engaged, to stay active in their lives, even when challenging. The journey of Ada Bible Church, Stephen. Mm-hmm. It, you know, back in the day, you know, started with 20 some people, grew up to 100. Then we had 3 false starts on a building program and dropped from 100 down to about 50. And so our net gain over our seven years at Ada Bible Church, first 7 years, was basically from 20 some people to 50 some people. Mm-hmm. And of the things that I am so grateful that I didn't just walk was just continuing to plug away there. What's harder is giving someone the advice when they're in the moment, you know, when it's going the wrong way and they say, how much longer do you give this? And it's hard to use your testimony. It's I say, this is descriptive, not prescriptive, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you mentioned even marriage, and I've heard you talk about this before. I can't remember exactly how many times that you had mentioned from stage that you and Chris have gone to marriage counseling.
At least 3 seasons.
Mm-hmm. And what that did for us, we had a rough season, and I think you just talking about that and your commitment to it, like, enabled me to swallow my pride enough to do it when we needed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chris and I were deeply committed to being in each other's life till death us do part, right? Yeah. And we just went through these stages where we didn't like each other. We were just talking past each other, and we just went, man, it's got to be better than this. Mm-hmm. And I'm just super grateful that the times when I've been able to say, yeah, you know, year 7, year 14, year 19, and give people the freedom to go, okay, you too. We're not the only ones, the only ones struggling here.
And that was our story.
Wow.
I think of some women that I've talked to who have hard mental health diagnosis. And it's just, it is hard, lonely work to power through. And we'll talk together and pray together. And you know, they'll say, I'm just not as far as I want to be. They'll be so discouraged about like where they are, not as far as they want. And I'm like, you're showing up, like just trying to encourage that. Keep going. It's worth fighting for, worth rebuilding and keeping going. And I know that's been my journey with mental health. It's one of those things that can feel like up and down. Like I don't want to be back where I am, but to show up to counseling again and do the hard work of building the tools and retraining my thoughts. And
back to our conversation of the things we hold open-handed and say, okay, you can quit that. Don't quit that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Don't quit that. There are certain, there's a certain list of things. I would add, don't give up on the church. And that is that there is possible to be involved in a church that is so unhealthy, it breaks your heart, so that you look for a different church. But to give up on church to give up on Jesus entirely because of an unhealthy church situation, I go, don't give up on that. Don't give up on God. Don't give up on building a network of friends because you need people. Don't give up on those things. But we're talking blisters. We're talking muscle aches, you know, we're talking sweat. If these things were easier, some of them would have been tackled a long time ago, but they're the most rewarding and they're some of the most challenging.
One of the other things that you had said in the meeting that I think you mentioned in a previous sermon was that Nehemiah got to certain points where he noticed this spot in the wall is low and he stationed like an extra guard there. And you had said like knowing where the low spots in your wall is and where you're vulnerable. And I think especially this time of year as we enter holidays and all the extra emotions that can come with that of maybe some things we're vulnerable.
The builders here that there's this going to be this sneak attack. It's like wherever you turn, they're going to be there and they're going to kill us. And so the first thing Nehemiah does is he stations guards at the most exposed places in the wall. Because you had some places that were super high and some places that were super low. And it's kind of like, you know, if I were to attack us, I'd come right through there. And that's where, because he couldn't station people everywhere. And it's right before he gives a speech. And so he's got to gather as many people as possible, but those guards will not hear this pep talk because they're guarding the low spaces. And I remember one of the times that we walked through Nehemiah, just asking people, where are you most vulnerable? That is knowing you, like you, where would you attack you? And immediately some people go, I don't have a clue. And other people go, loneliness during the holidays. As we're trying to get a budget in balance when other people take trips that we're not going to take. And it's just depressive and it's just demoralizing. When other people get positions or job opportunities that I have craved and, you know, I haven't been able to come into yet. And so know where you're most vulnerable and guard, you know, Proverbs chapter 4, above all else, guard your heart, because everything you do is going to come out of a healthy heart or a resentful heart, a numb heart, a dead heart. And so this guard your heart. You go, well, thank you. Well, backup question or second question, where is your heart most vulnerable to attack? And having the knowledge and self-awareness to figure out, knowing me and my past, this is where I'm most vulnerable. Right here.
That's been a big theme throughout this sermon series is setting your heart, guarding your heart, deciding ahead of time. And I think that's just a great encouragement for us as we head into the new year and have maybe some extra space over the holidays to do a little reflecting. Where am I actually? Where is my heart? Where am I vulnerable? Where do I need to set a guard and set my heart for the future?
Well, and this is one of our last few podcasts before the new year too. And if you're thinking about, okay, it's one thing to know where you're vulnerable. It's another thing to set a guard there and then build it up so it's no longer vulnerable, which is what Nehemiah does. He doesn't leave the guard there forever.
Yeah.
He puts it there because he recognizes it's vulnerable and then they start building that wall up.
Yeah.
And there are vulnerable areas of our life that in partnership with the Holy Spirit, we can turn into non-vulnerable or not nearly as vulnerable areas.
Here's where I'm vulnerable and what does it mean to shore up that area?
What does it mean to shore up that area?
Well, as we think of December and the holidays, this is also kind of a significant milestone coming up. Maybe we've already passed it, but December marks two years.
Two weekends from now. will be 2 years.
I don't even know where these two years have gone.
Aaron and I stood on the platform together and I took a runner's baton and placed it in his hand and released the responsibility of leading Ada Bible Church, and Aaron Buer, our senior pastor, picked that baton up. And so it's been 2 years.
How's it going?
It's going better than any of us could have anticipated, mm-hmm. and we thought it was going to go well.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine a better succession mm-hmm. and a better transition plan mm-hmm. from a church going from a long tenured pastor that they knew and trusted to a new senior pastor mm-hmm. that they knew and trusted without drama.
Yeah.
And with loads of goodwill. And so I just am super, super grateful. And I can't imagine a congregation receiving a better transition of leadership.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember we talked about some of this when it happened, but I'm remembering that you approached some of our governing elders about stepping out of the senior pastor role and started that transition conversation. Yeah. And I'm just curious, you know, I think John MacArthur preached till he was like 85 or something.
Yeah.
So what prompted you, you know, to kind of start that in your heart and to start that conversation?
Yeah, and I hope to preach till I'm 85, just not to lead a church.
Yeah.
I was approaching, Stephen, I was approaching age 60 and 61. At 61, it was my 40th year at Ada Bible Church. So I will have completed my fourth decade.
Yeah.
And entering my 60s, finishing four decades, I was just asking the question, this was the driver, what are my 60s supposed to be about? Mm. And is it just supposed to be about exactly what my 50s, 40s, and 30s were supposed to be about, building a healthy church in a community? And I just sensed that more of my time should be spent mentoring preachers, encouraging leaders, being a pastor to pastors. Here's the kicker, while continuing to give myself to Ada Bible Church, which is the craziness of our situation. Mm-hmm. That is, it's not uncommon for pastors to resign and leave. It is very rare that a founder type after decades can stick around as a new person takes over the leadership role and have it be done in a healthy way. And so we have a couple many advantages. Aaron was an internal hire. I had worked with him for 15 years. There was loads of trust built there. Mm-hmm. I had the privilege of pouring into him year after year after year. So I came to our elders with two questions, and this would be in 2020. Smaller group of elders, and it was the question, and it was in writing, can you envision Aaron Buer as our next senior pastor, and can you envision a scenario where I could stay after that transition takes place? And wisely, it took them 2 years to answer those two questions. And their first, Greg Flick, our just phenomenal chairman of the board, wonderful, bring us your developmental plan. What are you going to do over the next 2 years to develop Aaron even farther into the best senior pastor he can be? When do you need it? When can you have it? You know what I'm saying? And it's a spreadsheet that I bring into this small board meeting. And then 2 years later, when we got the green light, because in our I don't have the authority to appoint my successor. That's something our elders have to do. But when we got it green lighted, then that weekend, almost 3 years ago now, when I made the announcement in a weekend service, we had a whole year before that handoff came. And so I'm just grateful for the luxury of time. The fact that we could roll out a communication plan over a period of months. There was nothing sudden. There was no drama. There was no urgency that we have to have a change now. We were doing well financially, fairly steady, fairly healthy. It's just working. And I just have to give a ton of credit here to how honoring Aaron is to me. I still get to preach. This will, be my 35th weekend, a couple weeks from now, since the transition took place. And so 35 weekends is not a few mm-hmm. number. A less secure person would never allow that for the former main teaching, you know, guy and leader to take that many weekends.
Well, and I mean, it's the preaching, but it's also, I know you are talking with him behind the scenes mm-hmm. about like, cause I sit in executive team meetings, we'll talk about an idea. And he's like, I gotta go talk to Jeff about that. You know? And so he's, I know you're not actively leading, but you're yeah. still a strong voice.
I'm not doing, I'm no longer on the board. I don't sit on the board. I don't sit in executive meetings and I don't sit in management meetings.
Yeah.
What mm-hmm. I do, Aaron and I have lunch every 2 weeks mm-hmm. and he'll say, hey, these are some things coming up. I just wanted you to know some things I'm deciding so you don't hear about it with everybody else. And that's just honoring. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then from time to time, he'll say, hey, I'm making a decision. Are there some questions you might ask yeah. that might help me make a better decision? It's still his decision. But so he'll ask for advice every once in a while. And every once in a while, I'll offer advice when he's not asking for it. You know, mm-hmm. but that helps me feel included and valued. And he yeah. doesn't need to do that. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, we love being in each other's company. I just can't imagine a more fluid transition, which is like barely a ripple. And ministries go through serious setbacks in moving from long tenured senior leaders to the next person. And so for Ada to get a next generation leader without bloodshed, carnage and trauma.
And smooth. And now you're still working full time.
Oh, yeah.
That's a statement, not a question.
Yeah,
you are working full time.
I have to answer all the time. How's your retirement going? And I go, oh, you know. So yeah, my commitment to Ada right now is kind of, you know, 17 to 20 weekends a year at Ada as Aaron needs me. In addition to that, I'm training. Mm-hmm. I do preaching workshops often out of my home, but I do them internationally too. Mm-hmm. So Amelia, I used to be able to do maybe one or two of these a year while I was preaching at 30 weekends and above and leading the ministry. I've done 11 of these since I did the baton pass, most in my living room, but Czech Republic, Poland, two in Finland. That was all one trip over to Europe, being able to help pastors internationally. And then I did two last month, one in my home and then one out at the lakeshore, where I give preachers 2 days of, you know, training in preaching skills. And I just couldn't do that at that frequency because it's draining. So Chris says, I'm busier and I'm lighter.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And by lighter, she means when I walk in at the end of the day, she can sense that I'm not carrying the weight of the ministry on my shoulders. And so, so there has been no time to woe is me, you know, depress out or anything. And I really hurt for or feel for people that go from really, really full life into nothing. Mm-hmm. And I went into from very full life to very full life. So where she gets more of me, the grandkids get more of me, my kids get a better version of me. Mm-hmm. And so.
And they get you at Christmas.
Yeah, Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve, yeah, 40 years in a row. Yeah. No, and I know you've been a great resource to staff as well. Huh. And I've heard of even recent care situations where I know you've had phone calls and coached one of the campus pastors through something. And I think you did a funeral training.
Yeah, I have a wedding training in February. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just haven't done, I don't know, a couple hundred weddings, a couple hundred funerals. You tend to see things over time. Mm-hmm. And just being able to pour into our own staff is a joy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm just super grateful and I'm super blessed. And Aaron and I were and are deeply, deeply committed to attempt to bring what we've kind of crassly called a gold standard transition. That what can we do to bless our church, but other organizations attempting to figure out how to crack the transition code, maybe some of our journey can be helpful with them as well.
We've been blessed and encouraged, and we've been pretty behind the scenes on some of it, parts of it. And I think all of it is so honoring to Christ's church and honoring and glorifying to God's name because others are watching, within the community and other churches. And just what I've been so grateful for is just how honoring to our God and his name that it has all been.
We believe the stakes are very high.
Yeah.
People walking through the doors of Ada Bible Church So many of them come from busted up families, broken marriages, second and third try, business partnerships where it was your best friend and 3 years later, over financial fights or strategic fights, you barely talk anymore. And for a church family just to say, excuse me, but can my church at least get this right?
Yeah.
Aaron and I have worked very, very hard for the answer to be, we're doing everything that we can just to model humility, unity, and love of the organization over love of self.
And, and I mean, that's, it's the bride of Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, so it's love of Jesus through love of the organization. Yeah. And I think that's what we miss sometimes is that Jesus is like, this is my thing. This is the thing I chose to change the world. And we tend to treat it like a, just like a store or some other organization that has our loyalty. And yet it's so much bigger and more important. And that's, you know, the way you and Aaron have handled it is just really speaks to that.
Wow. Super grateful. And I'm grateful that it's observed, but I think it's gone better than people even see.
Yeah.
That the amount of laughter and joy Aaron and I have in each other's company and the total absence of conflict, it really feels like the favor of God is over the relationship. And so as he pursues Christ and as I pursue Christ and as we seek to humble ourselves and honor each other, there's something happening there that's just really, really wonderful. And unfortunately, it's unique. And we would love it for be less unique than it is.
Yeah.
To be a witness and a testimony to others. Yeah. As to why it's gone so well.
Yeah.
Well, as we wrap up this portion of our conversation and kind of closing out the year and the series, just any final thoughts you'd love to give to our listeners about either the series or the season or the transition, the church?
Just maybe a word about Christmas that's not filled with sentimentality and hype and not cliche. Christmas is busy and it's lonely. And I am still in wonder that the creator of the universe came as like a 7-pound crying infant and entered our planet in weakness, in humility, and experienced every human emotion we would experience. And so there's presents and there's family and there's food and there's more activity. I'm heading to a grade school Christmas program to hear from here to watch granddaughters. And yet at the core is just he came for us and to live here and to experience what we experience and then to give himself for us. And so the baby in the manger, that's how God came, has not ceased to overwhelm me.
That's such a gift. Thanks for sharing. It's a great place to land. Thanks for being here today.
Good to be here. Thank you, Stephen. Thanks for meeting.
I love that. It's such a powerful reminder for all of us as we enter into this week leading up to Christmas. And I'm just grateful to be part of a church that cares for people like that and for leadership that really seeks to glorify God in all that they do. And what you see in public is what it is like in private behind the scenes. It's authentic.
Yeah. I think what I love about our staff is we have a group of people who are really trying to live out what it means to follow Jesus. And that doesn't mean they're perfect. And I was thinking about, you know, one of the things Jeff said this weekend was how they were committed to making it work, both in public and in private. And I think what is behind that statement is a realization that they're both fallen, broken people. And so for you to be committed to make it work, you wouldn't have to be committed to make it work if they were perfect and did everything right all the time. But just recognizing that along the way, one of them's going to do something that kind of frustrates or upsets the other one. And that the way to honor the church and to honor Jesus through that is seeking reconciliation right away. And I think that's one of the things I love about our staff. They're people who genuinely want to do it right. It doesn't mean they never mess up. They don't make mistakes. They don't say the wrong thing or they're not short with somebody every once in a while, but they do genuinely care about leading people in a relationship with God and his church that transforms them into Christ likeness.
It's what do we do when when we have an issue, when there is reconciliation needed, when there is a wrong that happens. And this is something that should stand out in the world. Mm. It's one of the ways the church should be a light. It's not that we are perfect and we get it right all the time, but what we do when things go wrong. And I was talking with a new believer probably about a year ago, brand new to the faith, brand new to church. And she had that first moment when she realized church people are still people. and that first like disappointment and expectation mm-hmm. not met and something that happened. And I was glad that she got to that point and then we could talk it through. I'm like, okay, we're still broken people. The difference should be, what do we do now? And it was this light bulb moment for her to realize that the church is still made of broken people who still sin, but the difference, the light should be, how do we reconcile? How do we respond? And she and I talked through some steps to take in viewing the situation and how to reconcile. And it was freeing. It was freeing for her to realize how different we should be.
I think it was a staff training that we were doing about this very topic. And the person leading the training was saying, you have two options as a Christian. You can either cover it in grace, which mm-hmm. the Bible talks about if there's an offense and you don't think somebody was doing it intentionally. And you're just like, yeah, I'm going to cover that in grace just mm-hmm. and let it go. Or you can confront in grace. Mm-hmm. And then I think I remember thinking, I'm like, there's no complain in grace option.
yeah.
There's a, you can cover it in grace. Like, I'm just going to move past this. I don't need to make a big deal out of it. You can confront the person. Hey, that when you did that, when you said that, here's how I felt. But again, it's confronting them in grace, recognizing that you're just as capable of doing that as them. And often, mm-hmm. even in the church, we try to complain mm-hmm. sometimes with grace, sometimes without grace. And that's not the way Christians should live. And that's what I loved about this. The way Jeff shared is they built a system that they were forced with either covering it in grace or confronting it in grace mm-hmm. between him and Aaron as they processed the transition and doing it really well. And it's a great model for all of us mm-hmm. about in all of our relationships.
I think that's a good word too, as we head into the holidays and Christmas and New Year's and all the extra gatherings with friends and family, and tensions can be high and emotions can be high. Mm-hmm. Do we want to So is it something we just need to cover in love and grace, or something that we need to confront in love and grace, depending on if there's a pattern or history there? So such a good word. Well, as we wrap up, head towards the finish line of Epic, there's one more sermon. We're mm-hmm. going to do one more fun podcast that we'll release in a week or so, and we'll do a little wrap up for the year. There's something you had mentioned as we conclude Epic that I thought would be helpful to talk about here. And it's really putting all of the books of the Old Testament on that timeline. So we've looked at this timeline throughout the sermon series. And I thought it could be fun to see where the books of the Bible fit on the timeline, because we didn't get to cover them all. And another tip that I have is it's sometimes helpful to have a chronological Bible reading plan printed off and tucked mm-hmm. in your Bible. I got this tip from somebody else once. Then when you're reading a book of the Bible or you're in a certain story, you can kind of see where it fits in with the rest of the biblical story in the Old Testament. So like, for example, under patriarchs, you've got Genesis and Job. So the story of Job happens during the era
right.
of the patriarchs.
But that's not, if you were just reading through the Bible, you'd be like, oh, I have no idea when this happens.
Mm-hmm. And then, so my personal tip would be, I know there are a lot of great reading plans out there that are chronological. Print it off, keep it in your Bible. If you want to read through the Bible in a year, we're going to talk about that next week and some strategies mm-hmm. for that. But I personally have found reading the Bible chronologically to be really confusing and challenging. And I did that once early on in my read through the Bible. And I've had people approach me, you know, struggling with a chronological plan, because you get halfway through Genesis and then you're jumping into Job. And I'm like, if that doesn't work for you and you find it confusing, that's okay. The Bible wasn't written necessarily to be read chronologically. We absolutely can do that, and that's fine, and that's helpful in seasons. But like, Genesis was meant to be read, you know, start to right. finish. And so I've had several people tell me this year that they've struggled with that. I'm like, that's okay, just pick a different one.
Yeah. And I think there's a book out, it's called The Story mm-hmm. and I think it's an edited copy of the Bible to put it all in that chronological order. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think it has, because there are some stories told twice in different spots, especially when you get in Kings and Chronicles. So I don't know that it has the entirety of the Bible in it, but what it does is do it. It tells the whole story in a way that's not like flip over here, flip over there, yeah. flip over here. And so if somebody's looking and says, man, I'm really struggling to grasp, or I really want to read it. That's, I think that's the better play
yeah.
than trying to come up with a chronological study plan.
So we can link to that. I had a copy of the story on my desk today and I totally could have brought it over. So we can link to that. And we'll also link to a chronological reading plan, but mm-hmm. let's talk through. So I just gave the patriarchs, which are Genesis and Job, and that would include like Abraham, Jacob, Joseph.
Yeah. And then, so the timeline, let me run through the timeline real quick
yep.
in case you don't have it in your head. Patriarchs, Exodus, Judges, Kingdom, Exile, and Return. Mm-hmm. So patriarchs, the Genesis and Job, and then Exodus gets you Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Mm-hmm. And then you have this kind of a transition book mm-hmm. between the Exodus and the Judges of Joshua. You could make an argument that Joshua is the first judge, or he's the last person of the Exodus because he takes him into the promised land. So that's kind of the Moses and Joshua yeah. time period.
And then the next one is the Judges, which the books in that one would be Judges and Ruth. So the story mm-hmm. of Ruth happens in the era of the Judges. And the first verse, I think, in the first couple of verses of the book of Ruth, it says during the time of the Judges. Yeah. So that's how we know that. So that would be, you know, Deborah, we talked about her story. Gideon is another story. So, and then the story of Ruth happens there in the era of the Judges.
And it's interesting. I think we talked about this in the podcast. We didn't cover Ruth, mm-hmm. but she is kind of put up as this righteous outsider compared to the lack of righteousness of the Israelites. Mm-hmm. And so if you're reading that, just have that in the back of your mind. And then we get to what we call the kingdom. And this is a lot of the literature of the Old Testament. So you have books like 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Songs, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, in Zephaniah.
And we've talked about there's the United Kingdom, which was just Saul, David, and Solomon, and then the kingdom splits. And so then you have, this is where the timeline, the chronological timeline can be helpful, because you have two kings in two different kingdoms for a period of time, two different sets of prophets from God talking to the two different kings, trying to call them all back to faithfulness. And so this is a big chunk of it leading then into exile. Which then that's the next category of exile. We talked about Jeremiah. And then also in there would be Esther, Lamentations, Ezekiel, and Daniel. And some of these are contemporaries. They're at different yeah. places in the exile. Like I think Ezekiel and Daniel are kind of in the same era.
And you also, so I mean, these are categories of, that we've are kind of using to help understand the whole Testament. But 2 Kings goes to the fall of Jerusalem and mm-hmm. the exile. Mm-hmm. Chronicles ends with the destruction and exile. So you're seeing the exile there yeah. as well.
Second Chronicles kind of bleeds into yeah. exile and return. I think it ends right. with return.
Into return, which is that next category. So the Second Chronicles has that decree from Cyrus that mm-hmm. we talked about with Jeff and Nehemiah. And so that's Ezra, Nehemiah, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi mm-hmm. are all those return books.
Yeah.
About what does it look like to come back and try to restore a relationship with God mm-hmm. in some ways.
And so we can put this in the show notes too, with kind of those categories of the timeline and the list of books and where they are. And I think it's just helpful to know where we are when we're reading scripture, to know what was happening, where it falls in the timeline of Israel's history.
Right. And if we step back and say, okay, what have we tried to do over the last 15 weeks? We've tried to see, you know, stories of people's faithfulness and their failure and mm-hmm. how they point to us, to Jesus. We've tried to figure out what are the applications to our life, like we did this week, about what are the types of character traits you need to rebuild a life. Mm-hmm. But we've also tried to help people understand the full story of the Bible, and just knowing where books fall into that story is really helpful as you read it. Mm-hmm. And even as you hear other people teach, like, okay, here's what's going on in this time period. Mm-hmm. This is where it's set. This is what God's doing.
And that's a great segue into Christmas, because all of this has been leading us to mm-hmm. the promise of Messiah, which will be this final sermon. So we'll have the promise of Messiah and then Christmas Eve services on the 23rd and the 24th. And I have a surprise. Maybe you know this already.
I don't.
If not, act surprised. But I have the Christmas Eve program.
I have not seen it.
It's because it's hot off the presses.
Okay.
I went into the comms department this morning and was like, hey, I know we talked about this idea. Where did that land? Can I talk about it? Do you have one? And they said no. And then an hour later, Becca came from our comms department and she's like, guess what I have? Okay. So I think you might know about this, but I'm not sure. Within our Christmas Eve program, for all of you who have been following along with Epic and collecting the cards, there's a bonus card on the Epic. So if you're watching on video, you can see. But if not, make sure you pick one up. It's a tear-off card. It's a Jesus card with all the same things on the back about the overview of the story, the purpose, the reflection questions. I'm so excited for you all to get this at Christmas. And you can tear it off. Now, you have to punch your own hole because we couldn't quite work it out to get perforated and a hole punched. But to add to your collection for your cards.
That is our comms team. And I know, Amelia, you probably had something to do with it.
Just some words. That's all I did was write some words.
Full of gifted people who are using their gifts for God's kingdom.
Yeah. So we're really excited about this because truly this has been the epic arc of the story, all pointing to the coming of the Messiah. So I'm really excited for you all to get this. And it's going to be a handy keep, the card, and then some recipes from our events team, Christmas recipes.
I did hear about those. So I won't say what they are, but I will say that I think I've had at least one of them.
Yes.
And
you will want to make it.
It might be life-changing.
It might be. Yeah. Change all your Christmas parties. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So take that epic card. And I know some of you have been collecting the cards and sending them to friends and family who are far away or watch online. So you'll want to grab some of the extra Jesus cards on that as well. But I thought that was a fun little surprise. Mm-hmm. So we'll wrap up here with Nehemiah. And the questions on these were really challenging. How has God shown mercy to you and restored you, or what broken area of your life needs God's restoring power?
Yeah, I was like, man, those are really powerful and questions. And it makes sense that as we get toward the end of the series that we should be asking these types of questions of ourselves as we've kind of grown and the types of things God's asking us. And I was thinking about that first one, how has God shown mercy to you and restored you? I think I've shared in the podcast before about there was a season, maybe 10 to 15 years ago, where I went through a season of deep disappointment with the death of a dream, is what I would call it, which I walked through. And I think while I tried to walk through it in a way that was appropriate, I am about 100% confident there were times where I was over sassy and dramatic with God. And God was so gracious to me in that season. He was patient. He gave me good people to walk through that season with me. He gave me glimpses of his love in really tangible ways. He taught me a ton about trust. And it was still really hard. It was still a time of discerning what was next. But he was just so kind and gracious to me. And I feel like he brought me through that season to some ministry opportunities that have been so rewarding and life-giving. Yeah. And so I think about mercy in the midst of a really hard season, and then just, hey, this is what I have for you. It feels a lot like restoration.
And I love what you described, even when you're like, I probably didn't have all the right attitude, but you took it all toward God. Like, that's the big difference of when we turn to him in the midst of the rubble and the destruction and the weariness of rebuilding. And he invites us to bring all of that to him.
And it's interesting because I think maybe right at the tail end of all this season was my first interaction with Ada Bible. And it was either right when Jeff was preaching through Rebuilding a Life, or right at he'd finished. And it was right in that same time period. So whenever that sermon series was, that's when at least the tail end of this was going on.
Yeah.
And it was really helpful.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. As we wrap up this episode, we'll look again at the verse. On the back of the card, it says, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, in order to fulfill the word of the Lord spoken by Jeremiah, the Lord moved the heart of Cyrus, king of Persia, to make a proclamation throughout his realm. And that's the call where they're allowed to go back and rebuild. And I there's so much in that one verse to fulfill the word of the Lord that he'd said through Jeremiah, and that the Lord moved the heart. I just see so many of the themes here that we've talked about. One, that God is the central character and that he will move hearts even when it feels impossible, that nothing will stop his plan. which culminates in Jesus.
Such good stuff.
So, well, thank you all for joining us. We'll have one more episode. It's going to be kind of a year in review wrapped for the whole Beyond the Weekend podcast. And we're looking forward to that. That will release next week. Our normal release date is Christmas Eve. So I don't think it will release on Christmas Eve because, you know, we've got like 2,500 services happening.
A lot of services that we're excited about.
The 23rd, 24th, that I'm so excited.
Can't wait to welcome people into our building.
So excited. It's going to be fun. So keep an eye on social media for when that's going to release next week, but you don't want to miss it. We're going to talk about some things that are coming up in the next year that we're excited to preview as well. So thanks for joining us. May God bless you and keep you, and have a Merry Christmas. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the A to Bible Church Beyond the Weekend podcast. We pray this conversation was helpful and encourages you throughout the week as you seek God's help to grow in His Word. You can find all resources mentioned in this episode in the show notes, including a link to this week's sermon and the current sermon series. We hope you'll join us next time for the Beyond the Weekend podcast.